Well, gosh, to be honest, I had intended to talk about Jacob this Sunday. We've been reading the story of Jacob for a few weeks now, and it seemed like about time that we reflected on what we've been reading. But when we received the urgent message from Mount Airy Net to replenish the shelves of the food bank this week, I realized that it was important to leave Jacob and his family aside for another week and talk about loaves and fishes. The story that we heard from Matthew's gospel today is one of the principal stories that has shaped Christian tradition and Christian mission since the beginning of Christianity. We often call this story the feeding of the 5,000, but you will no doubt have noticed that the crowd that was fed in this story must have been many more than 5,000, since the women and the children were not included in the count. It's a story of abundance and of wonder, and in some ways a more astonishing story than the many healings that Jesus did. And it's a story that prefigures the way that Christians have gathered and worshiped ever since, for the feeding of many with a small amount of bread is fundamental to our practice and understanding of communion. But in some ways, it's a very unremarkable story, and that things like that are happening every day in the world. In his book, Miracles, C.S. Lewis points out that the multiplication of the loaves and fishes, and even that other miracle of abundance, the changing of water into wine at the wedding of Cana, are not really different than the transformations that happen every year in our oceans and farms and vineyards. Small amounts of grain, small numbers of fish grow until they can feed a multitude. And through the agency of sunshine and vines and yeast and tender care, water is turned into wine over and over. And for C.S. Lewis, this is not an indication of the ordinariness of the feeding of the 5,000, but rather an indication of the miraculousness of the world that continues to nourish all of us. The growth of fish and grain and grape is no less miraculous because it usually happens more slowly than in today's gospel story. And there are other kinds of feeding miracles that happen all the time. Let me tell you a couple of stories. When I was just out of seminary, I served as a chaplain to a homeless shelter in San Francisco that was run by the Diocese of California. The shelter offered breakfast and dinner to the residents, but not lunch. And it was the custom of one of the nearby churches to host what in California would be called a barbecue, but here would be called a cookout, at lunchtime, four times a year, for the residents of the shelter. As it happened, a few days before one of these cookouts, one of the residents of the shelter showed his printed announcement to a staff member from one of the downtown feeding programs that did offer lunch, and that program, thinking that this was an open invitation, decided that they would take a day off, close their doors, and send all of their clients to us. It turned out that word spread, and four other feeding programs decided to do the same thing, so that by the time the volunteers got to the church in the morning to light the charcoal and begin setting up for the cookout, there was a line down to the end of the block of hungry people. And long before we were ready to begin serving, the line stretched nearly around the very large city block where the church was located. Since we were expecting about 100 people, and the line had eight times that many, volunteers were dispatched to every grocery store in the area to buy up all of their hot dogs and buns and potato salad and bag lettuce and Crystal Light lemonade and chips and baked beans, not to mention paper plates and plastic cups and flatware and bags of ice, while everyone who lived nearby raided their pantries and refrigerators for ketchup and mustard and relish. We wheeled a cart down the line on the sidewalk to serve lemonade and water to those who were waiting in line, to try to keep the line orderly and the many people who were emotionally unstable from becoming agitated or violent. The bishop's own mother, who was a member of the congregation, had brought a couple of large pans of her homemade blueberry cobbler, and she went from table to table, dishing out minuscule portions so that everybody should get some, augmented by store-bought cookies, and she had a conversation with each person she served. In the end, over 800 people were served that day, and no one was turned away. Here's another story. My sister and her family belonged to a Roman Catholic congregation out in California. The priest of that parish is new there, and last year he decided, together with the church's outreach team, to do something different with the outreach budget. Instead of spreading the money thinly between organizations that the community supported, he gave the money back to the congregation. Inspired by the parable of the three servants, he handed out money in $50 and $100 increments with the instruction that the parishioners were to do their best to make the money grow before returning it to the church to serve the needy. The money, about $2,000 in all, was used to fund lemonade stands and stock investments and bake sales and even to advertise a fundraising concert members of the community put on. And in the end, the congregation returned over $30,000 to the outreach budget. A Presbyterian pastor friend of mine does a similar thing on a smaller scale. Every year, he gives each member of his congregation a dollar, and he charges them to come back with a story of how they used that dollar to make a difference. The stories are collected and published, and the whole congregation becomes the outreach team of the church. Now, these stories of mine all have one thing in common with today's gospel lesson. For you see, the essential thing about the story of the feeding of the crowd is not that everyday miracle of a little becoming enough, but the interaction between Jesus and his disciples. The disciples want to send the crowd away before hunger makes them unruly, but Jesus says, no, you give them something to eat. And in the original Greek, that word you is made emphatic. You give them something to eat. Jesus tells his followers that feeding the hungry is their task, but more importantly, he tells them and then shows them that despite their doubts, what they already have is enough. Now, we don't know for certain whether the bread and the fish kept dividing infinitely, or if, as some have suggested, the act of sharing from so meager a store caused the others in the crowd to pull out the food that they had hidden away for themselves so that all were able to eat. But it doesn't really matter. Whether it was a miracle of fecundity or the no less wondrous miracle of generosity, all were fed. What they had was enough. We know that the hunger in our community and in our nation and indeed in the world is not caused by there being too little food. The United Nations Food and Agriculture Organization reports that current worldwide food production is enough to give every single person 2,700 calories a day. That's not just enough to live on, that's enough for everybody to become obese. So science confirms what Jesus shows us, that what we already have is enough. And that in itself is a miracle. But it leaves us with the challenge that Jesus gave to his first followers. You give them something to eat. Now, I don't propose to solve the difficult economic, logistical, and social problems of world hunger here and now, but I can state with certainty that what we have is enough to feed the hungry of our own neighborhood. To those of you who have brought food this week for Mount Airy Net, I say on their behalf and on behalf of those who will eat because of your generosity, thank you. For those of you who have not yet brought anything, it will never be too late. Jesus said the poor will always be with you, and history has shown him to be right so far. So keep on sharing from the miraculous gifts that you have been given so that others may eat and share in the miracle of God's abundance. The shopping cart where we collect food for Mount Airy Net is always in the narthex. Let's make sure that it and the shelves at the food bank are never empty again. What we already have is certainly enough for that. And if you do want to learn more about what you can do to help with the larger problem of world hunger, make sure that you come to church on August 24th, when the Reverend Bruce Torrey of the organization Food for the World will be joining us to preach and preside and talk about his organization's work and how we can support them in their drive to end world hunger at last. Not only is what we have already been given enough, both our food and our generous hearts, but when we combine those gifts with those generous hearts, both the gifts and our hearts almost miraculously continue to grow. Amen.